Good morning. It is Friday, April 19th. The war in the Middle East is now 196 days long. I'm Jonathan Conricus, a newly appointed senior fellow at the FTD, and this is our morning briefing. I'm filling in for the second time due to the fact that Jonathan Schanzer is traveling, and I know that this will be an interesting morning briefing for you. Of course, thinking of last night's events and the guests that we have lined up. Our guest this morning is Brigadier General Yossi Kupferwasser from the IDF. He is one of the most respected and experienced intel officers in Israel. He has held various senior positions, and he has a lot of experience relevant to the topics that we are going to discuss today: Israel, Iran, terrorism, and the region. And in a few minutes, we will speak with Yossi about what today's events mean for Israel, for the region, for the US, and probably for the world as a whole. But before that, a few words about where we stand and about last night's events. Last Friday, for those of you who watched, I assessed, and that was before the Saturday attacks of Iran when they launched 350 rockets and missiles and drones towards Israel. I assessed on Friday that Iran wasn't going to do such a strike because I thought that it wouldn't be conducive to Iranian strategy and it wouldn't be good for their long-term interests. I was proved wrong. Maybe Yossi will shed light on Iranian decision-making and their calculations to help us understand better what made Iran deviate from many decades of their strategy. Now, official Israel has been keeping quiet, very quiet, except for one off-the-cuff tweet by an Israeli minister. But other than that, Israel has been keeping quiet. And for me, it's unclear what led the U.S. to out or to report in the media that Israel had notified the U.S. about an incoming or an imminent Israeli strike on Iran. That was first reported in U.S. media, and then from there on, a few hours afterwards, in Iranian media, and since then, reported all over the world. Israel is basically trying to de-escalate, not to escalate the situation further. Israel has another pool of fish to fry: Hamas, Hezbollah, urgent topics to deal with in Rafah. And I think that is why Israel has chosen so far a very quiet way of basically allowing Iran not to, or Israel not taking responsibility for these attacks, and then allowing Iran to de-escalate the situation by themselves. Let's speak a little bit about what we know so far has happened. So we had a successful Israeli defense together with the US, UK, France, Jordan, and others on Saturday night against the barrage of Iranian missiles and rockets. 99% were intercepted. And yesterday, or this night, we saw a successive offense by Israel with a fraction of the arsenal used by Iran to attack Israel. Israel used only a fraction of the amount of missiles in order to deliver, I think, a clear message to Iran. The Israeli strike was quite relatively small. It was precise. Reportedly, all of the intended targets were struck, even though we still have to wait for full BDA. And the main target, not the only one, but the main target was in Isfahan, one of the airports, one of the military air bases near Isfahan, which is really in the heart of Iran, hundreds of miles away from the border with Iraq, so deep into Iranian heartland. And as Mark Dubovitz just stated on CNN a few hours ago, the message here is very clear, because Isfahan is also where very important nuclear assets are located inside Iran. They were not struck, and the Atomic Agency has reported on that as well. They were not struck, but Isfahan was struck, and the message being, we can strike that facility and we can strike others. Also, last point, very important from an Israeli perspective, US and any other Western country that may be dealing with the S-300 family of air defense batteries and radars in the future or presently, reportedly, and this is still unconfirmed, Israel struck S-300 radars that were positioned on the way as part of the Iranian air defenses and was successful in its endeavors. And we're still waiting for confirmation and more details on it, but that is definitely something that will influence operations in the Middle East regarding Syria, and I think also Ukraine, Russia, and other areas of the world. Now, a few other headlines that I've been tracking, and I think that you should be aware of. One, the headline number one relates to Hezbollah. On Wednesday, Hezbollah performed a quite impressive combined anti-tank missile and drone attack against a small Israeli city just on the border, less than a mile, or about a mile from the border with Lebanon. The name of the community is Arab el-Aramshe. And in that attack, 18 Israelis were wounded, 15 of them were soldiers, 4 of the wounded were severely wounded, one is even still in critical condition of those soldiers. Now, what Hezbollah did quite successfully for the first time was to monitor the area, track activities, strike with the drone, and get sadly quite significant results. Generally speaking, along the northern border, we see a steady pace of escalation. Israel has been able to take out Hezbollah commanders, brigade-level commanders. A few of them last week were taken out, and Hezbollah is retaliating. So far this morning, no significant Hezbollah attacks against Israel after the Israeli strike on Iran. Headline number two is, of course, related to Gaza. There are a lot of reports in Israeli media of plans, Israeli plans to launch an offensive against Rafah, against Hamas in Rafah. And the situation is, of course, that we have Passover, an important Israeli Jewish holiday, on Monday. And the reports are speaking about that the attack will be after Passover. I don't know how many days after, but those are reports. Of course, Israel will be focusing on the remaining Hamas battalions, the tunnels underneath Gaza, and of course, information and whereabouts and the ability to get hostages out. Humanitarian coordination and the provision of aid is a key topic. And I can say that from monitoring information disseminated by Israeli authorities, specifically COGAT, there is a steady and uninterrupted and increasing flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Last figures were more than 350 trucks and dozens of pallets that were dropped from the air, but 350 trucks that came in through various locations, and in addition to aid coming in via the sea. The challenge is distribution inside Gaza, not necessarily bringing it to the Gaza Strip. And of course, that will be a key point moving forward, but I definitely think you should be aware of, come Passover, what will happen in Rafah. Headline number three is what we spoke about last week, and FDD has written about it. There is still a Turkish flotilla, so-called aid flotilla, that is planned and slated to leave, to set sail from Turkey towards Gaza on Monday, also Passover. The NATO member, Turkey is a NATO member, that NATO member has still not been persuaded by the US or by NATO headquarters or any other country to stand down. And what we are in for is possibly a very challenging and negative situation. Remind everybody, 14 years ago, that we had the first such incident, which caused a rupture in Israeli-Turkish relations. And I think that both sides, Turkey and Israel, will seek to implement the lessons that were learned, both in terms of tactical activities, how to stop such a flotilla, and then in terms of media relations, mostly lessons that Israel needs to learn, and we will see how that unfolds. Last headline, a quick one, is about keeping our eyes on messaging in Arab countries, Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Western countries, the UK, US, France, etc., may say to Israel, don't strike, and may warn us against retaliating against Iran. But looking at how this is perceived and understood in the Middle East is perhaps, if not equally important, then more important, because standing up to Iran is a very important part in Israel's ability to be attractive for future peace treaties and the expansion of the Abraham Accords. So we're monitoring that closely. I'm now very pleased and happy and honored to introduce Brigadier General in Reserves, Yossi Kupervassil. Yossi, welcome. I'll introduce who you are for the people who haven't seen, since it's the first time that you are on the FTD Morning Brief. Yossi is the former head of Research and Analysis Division of the IDF Intel, which in plain language is the most senior professional Intel position in Israel. And Yossi held that position for quite a few years. Brigadier General Kubel Basel is also the former director of the Ministry of Strategic Affairs. And today, he is the advisor to the Analysis Division of Habitronistim, or the IDSF, the Israel Defense and Security Forum, and a research fellow at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. Welcome, Yossi. It's great to have you here on the Morning Brief for the first time. And we are going to go right into recent events between Iran and Israel and what all this means for the region and the world. First question, as a seasoned Intel expert, how surprised were you that Iran decided to deviate from decades of shadow lurking to strike Israel directly?
Well, I wasn't. First of all, thank you for having me, and thank you for the introduction, Jonathan. To add to all the things I do, I'm also the head of the Institute for the Research and Methodology of Intelligence, the Israeli Intelligence Community Commemoration Center. But who knows? Regarding of whether I was surprised or not, I was not surprised. I wrote a piece after the attack in Damascus, saying that what we are witnessing is an attempt by the Iranians to stretch the envelope of the rules of the game that prevailed until now in the last 12 years between us and the Iranians. And they ever since October 7th, were trying to stretch this envelope of rules of the game, according to which we were allowed to hit targets that belong to the Iranian axis in Syria without seeing retaliation, while they were allowed to do everything they can in order to promote the capabilities of those proxies that they have. And at a certain point, the Iranians, in their attempt to stretch the rules of the game, reached a place where a point where we couldn't play by the rules of the game anymore the same way we did until now. And we hit, what they did was actually trying to equip the terrorists in the Judean Samaria area with advanced weaponry that would have changed the way terrorism affects our lives in the Judean Samaria area and maybe beyond. So, and beyond that, they also asked the Iraqi Shiite militias that are subordinated to them to launch attacks against Eilat. One of them hit a military base in Eilat. This was the limit, going beyond the limit of what we saw before. And we retaliated by showing them that we can stretch the rules of the game too. And that was the attack on the headquarters of the Quds Force in Damascus that led to the death of several key figures, including, of course, Hassan Mahdavi, the key operator of this Quds Force in Damascus. And what happened was that at that point, my feeling was that they are going to go one step higher than that. And the reason for that is that it's double. On the one hand, they were suffering very heavily, and this suffering accumulated and added on former suffering that was not responded properly from an Iranian point of view. And there was a lot of pressure on the Iranian leadership from the IRGC to do something different this time, because we cannot. If you don't do something different, then this means that we agree that the Israelis can kill anybody from our ranks. And they were under a lot of pressure. And on the other hand, they got the impression that time is ripe for doing something like that, because Israel is weak. And Israel suffers from lack of American support, and there's a lot of tension between Israel and the Americans. And Israel is reaching a dead end in Gaza, and don't know what to do with Hezbollah. And that's a good time to put more pressure on Israel, just to make sure that it doesn't, because of this pressure that it is under, going to enter Rafah and decide the war in Gaza, which is something that everything they're doing since October 7th is designed, is designated to prevent Israel from winning the war in Gaza and defeat Hamas. So they thought that this move with 335 projectiles directed towards Israel is going to make to do the job. The fact that they chose such a big number is also not a surprise, because they had to operate according to the rule of the big numbers. they know that Israel has a strong missile defense system. So if you want to hit a target in Israel, it's not enough to send five missiles. You need to send a big number so that if 95% of them are hit and intercepted, the rest are still going to make an impact. And that's why they chose to launch that many missiles and drones or whatever. And I don't think this came as a surprise. And the surprise is that the Israeli intelligence again failed in anticipating that. I hear that you failed too, so but you are not from the intelligence, you are allowed to make these mistakes.
Right.
The problem is that the intelligence too made this mistake, but it was a good mistake because now, in retrospect, what happened following this attack was to the best interest of Israel. We showed how strong we are defensively, and we showed that we can hit Iran if necessary, wherever and whenever we want. And we sort of in a position where Iran has an egg over on its face and it doesn't know what to do right now. This is a strength. This strengthens our position in the Middle East. This strengthens our relations with the United States. This opens the gate for us operating in Rafah without with less resentment from the United States. I think all of that is for the better.
Okay, which brings us, thank you for that, which brings us to last night's events. Official Israel, as I said, has not taken responsibility, but how do you assess last night's strike on Iran? What do you think the main messages were that Israel was trying to deliver? And do you think that the action was successful?
Well, I, you know, in many interviews I gave before the attack, I said, this is what we need to do. So I cannot now change my mind. It's, yes, I think this was what we needed to do. We needed to deliver a message to the Iranians that they are vulnerable. Not only that we are not vulnerable or less vulnerable than they thought we are, but that they are more vulnerable than they think they are. And by that, rebuild the deterrence vis-a-vis the Iranians and force them to go back to the old rules. And we also, at the same time, we carried out an attack in Syria and maybe even in Iraq to deliver the clear message that according to the, we stay in with the old rules and we keep attacking the proxies and anything that threatens us in these places. And we expect them to go back to these rules or even maybe be deterred from doing that either, which is going to be even better. I think with the targets we chose, were very precise, and in the sense that they were targets very close to nuclear facilities, but still targets that were connected somehow to the attack on Saturday, so that the message is that we don't want escalation. We can escalate, but we don't want escalation, and take this into account. And this message of de-escalation is very important because we, it allowed us to keep the Americans satisfied. They didn't want to participate in the counterattack, but they were, and they were very careful to make sure that it's not an escalating attack. So we did that, and we didn't involve any of our regional partners, no Jordan, neither Saudi Arabia. So nobody should be worried that there are going to be any repercussions for them. And there's no there shouldn't be an escalation, and they are not involved anyhow. So this is very good, and this paves the road for us, as I said, to go back to the most important things that are on our agenda, mainly Gaza, Hamas in Gaza, and Hezbollah in the north.
Right. So following up on that, so how do you think that this ongoing, and whether it is ongoing, maybe it's now coming to a temporary pause, but you can comment on that, but let's say that this ongoing and unprecedented round of blows between Israel and Iran, how will that influence the situation along Israel's borders with the terrorist organizations that Israel has close to it, specifically Gaza and Lebanon?
Well, I don't think that Iran is going to stop supporting with all its might the proxies carry out terrorists against us in those places. But in my mind, it's going to continue. But I think that they are going to think again about launching missiles against us. Although saying that, I say we have to remain on alert, on high alert. It's, there are going to be discussions inside Iran, and all kinds of opinions are going to be raised in front of the supreme leader, and he might listen to all kinds of more radical elements within the regime. We have to be still on high alert, but I don't think this is going to the chances of this happening are much lower now. Whereas the chances that they are going to use their proxies in order to carry out terror attacks against us is still very high, and we should expect that. I think that Hezbollah, when it comes to its own calculation, not the Iranian requests are not the only calculation they have. They saw a show of Israeli capabilities in the last week, and they would not necessarily try to attract the attention of the Israeli Air Force to their side. So I think the Hezbollah would keep playing the game by the rules that were established since October 7th, and not necessarily try to do more. They might be faced with Iranian pressure. It's, we shall see how this works out. In the south, we saw that last night there was a rocket launched at Ashkelon. They will keep trying to do their utmost in order to hit Israelis. But they understand that the chances that they are now going to prevent us from entering Rafah are lower. The one tool that they may use now, or consider using, I don't think they're going to use it, but they may consider it with a higher propensity to consider it, is that maybe what they should come up with another answer to the hostages deal that they refused until now, because now that it's clear that Israel is going to Rafah, why wait until Israel enters Rafah and worsen the situation from Hamas' point of view? When it comes to the hostages deal, maybe the best time to do that is now. So I think this kind of logic may cross the Sinwar's mind. Sorry.
Right. So I know you commented on it before, but lastly, if you could comment on what do you think Israel and the U.S. should be focused on regarding Iran? Do you think that Israel should now be focusing on the nuclear military program? Should it be focusing on the Quds Force and Iran's regional terrorist spreading and activities? Or should the U.S. and Israel, or independently, be focusing on trying to overthrow the regime? I know that's an extreme question, but I'd like to hear your answer nevertheless.
Well, my answer is all of the above. I think what we need to be focused now is strengthening the alliance between us and the partnership between us and the Americans and the British and the Germans and the French, together with the regional powers, in an effort to turn the pendulum into the other direction. Until October 7th, the pendulum was moving in Iran's direction. Now there's a golden opportunity to move the pendulum to the opposite direction. And first, we have to improve our capability to prevent Iran from spreading its hegemony in the region, and for example, by destabilizing Jordan, by preventing free shipping in the Red Sea. These are all kinds of things that the Iranians are doing, and that we should stop them and take advantage of this opportunity that was given to us by a mistake of the Iranians. Secondly, we have to put much more pressure on the Iranians on the nuclear issue. Just imagine what would have, this entire situation look like if Iran was a nuclear state. So now they are a threshold nuclear state. We should make sure that they don't cross this threshold. And this is the time to create something much more effective. I must say that the sanctions that were adopted after the Iranian attack are poor and not really impressive, definitely not from the point of view of Iran. We need something much bigger. We have to go back to the sanctions that were in place before the JCPOA came into being. We need to put a lot of economic pressure, and the time is ripe for that, because the situation, the economic situation in Iran is very bad. So we should put pressure on Iran and in the context of the nuclear project, and tell them, you have to give it up. Otherwise, these sanctions are going to continue. I don't hear that being said, neither by the Americans nor by the Europeans. They all play with let's put sanctions on 16 members of the missile industry in Iran. Come on, that's ridiculous. So we have to do more about the Iranian nuclear project. I think it's very important what happened this last night in sending the message to the Iranians that the military threat is a credible one. It's we can really reach Iran, and we can do that even without the Americans. Israel can do that without the Americans. Israel has all kinds of creative ideas of how to hit Iran. And so they should be worried about the possibility of a military strike. And we have to use that in order to put other pressures on the Iranians to prevent them from having the nuclear weapons. And finally, I do think that we should start working on replacing the regime in Tehran, because the entire problem is the regime. Without this regime, Iran could have been a very positive player in the Middle East. So, and this regime is oppressing and suppressing its own population, depriving them from their human rights. And there's a lot of resentment towards the regime inside Iran. We should work on with the Iranian opposition, with the Iranian people, as a matter of fact, you know, to help them get rid of this terrible regime that is a danger for everybody, especially bearing in mind that this regime cooperates with China and Russia in all kinds of malign activities that they carry out around the world. So it's clearly an immediate interest of the West, and primarily the United States, to do something like that. This attitude of the United States that is so weak towards Iran should change, and the sooner the better.
Wow, big statements. I thank you for your insights, Brigadier General in Reserves Yossi Kupel-Wassel, a senior Intel expert. I thank you for your insights. We've gone a little bit longer than usual today on our morning briefing, but I think the day, the topic, and our guests warrant it. Thank you very much for being with us, Yossi. And I have a few more updates about...
Thank you, and I appreciate the FTD work. Thank you.
Thank you, Yossi. Now, a few quick updates of what FTD has in the pipeline. FTD Seth Franzman is out with a new piece focusing on the immaculate success that we just spoke about, but he's doing a deeper detail of the Israeli air defense system, which was critical in countering Tehran's aerial barrage. He's going to speak about decades of crucial cooperation between Israel and the U.S. in developing the air defense systems like the Arrow and the Iron Dome and many other things that led to the success. So interesting to read. Saeed Hassaminijad and Jonathan Saez's piece on it, which is featured in the National Review, looks at the impact of the U.S. election on Iran's economic troubles, as a Republican victory might mean the reinstatement of a maximum pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic of Iran. And if the sanctions pressure will begin to mount in response to Tehran's attack last week, the Iranian rial is already taking a hit, and that, of course, is interesting to follow. And finally, Behnam Bentaleblu, our esteemed colleague, testified in front of Congress at a joint subcommittee hearing on the Russo-Iranian cooperation and threats to U.S. interests. Behnam highlighted a growing axis of resistance of these two countries aiming to combat the Western-led world order, and how these two corrupt authoritarian regimes continue to partner in efforts to attack the U.S., its allies, and U.S. interests. And he also emphasized Congress' role in taking swift and decisive action against Tehran and Moscow in order to thwart their actions against beleaguered democracies. That's it for today. I apologize for going slightly long. And if you want more detailed expert analysis, you check it out on our website at FTD.org, and you can read our quick takes on Twitter, or formerly Twitter X, at FDD. And of course, make sure that you subscribe to our morning brief on YouTube and that you hit the bell so that you get notified when we're live. And thanks for joining me today. On Monday, you'll be happy to hear that Jonathan Shanzer will be back, and you'll be in his safe and experienced hands. And until then, I wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom and a wonderful weekend. Thank you for being with us.